Okay, so the special relationship between woman and Hanukkah. So there's really two aspects. There's A, woman's involvement in the story of Hanukkah, and then there is the relevant halachos that emanate from it. So I know there are a lot of sources on this page here, 12. It isn't too complicated this year, I don't think. This is really pretty linear. So the Gemara tells us in the Masechta Shabbos, well, just outside, we know that most time-bound mitzvos women are exempt from. That's the rule. Women are exempt from Taibat Mitzvahs. However, there's probably more exceptions to the rule than the rule itself. So one of those exceptions to the rule is what we call Afin Hayubi Osuanes. That if they were involved in the miracle, so then women are the same obligation in that mitzvah as men do. So for example, matzah on Pesach, or wine on Pesach, or any other examples, possibly Shal Shudas on Shabbos, that's a discussion. A couple of mitzvahs on Shabbos, some of those qualify as Afin Hayu Be'oso Anes, that they were also involved in the miracle. So that's why by Hanukkah also, the Gemara tells us that a woman is obligated in the mitzvah of Hanukkah. Why? So the Knoshim Chayvos, Benir Hanukkah, Sha'afin Haibios Anes, because they were also involved in the miracle. Now, what does it mean that they were also involved in the miracle? So for that, take a look at source number 2, which is a Tosos of Maseches Megillah, and it proposes two possibilities. It says, number one, what does it mean, Afin Haibios Anes, they were also involved in the miracle? So one is the Rashbam. The Rashbam says, Rashi's grandson, She'ikra Anes Haya Al Yad, that they actually accomplished the miracle. They were the ones who brought it about. What does it mean they brought it about? So he goes through all the examples on Purim, that Esther, right? So that's easy, right? Esther was the one who brought the miracle of Purim about. The other two are a little more complicated. By Hanukkah, Sha'alidei Yehudis, that Hanukkah was brought about by this woman Yehudis. So that's a bit of a mystery. We'll get to that in a moment. And by Pesach, Shebeschut Sitkani Yosha Osu Ador Nigalu, that was in the merit of those, of the merit of the righteous woman of that generation, that they got, that they were redeemed. The story with the trees, that the men would come up for work, and the woman would want to have relations with them in order to have more children, etc. So the first opinion is that women were responsible for all of these miracles. They brought them about. The second opinion is Vikasha the Lashon Sha'af. There's a bit of a question because of the language of Af. What does Af mean in Hebrew? Af means even. I mean, even they, Afin Hayubi Osonis, literally means they were involved in the miracle, implying that they weren't the main part of the miracle, they were even included in the miracle. So that perhaps fits in a little bit better with the language. And how was that? That they were also questionable, this is in Tosus and Megillah, but they were also questionably going to be destroyed and going to be killed. And by Pesach also, they were also enslaved. And by Hanukkah also, there was a difficult gezeirus, there were difficult things that were imposed upon them. So they were also saved, and therefore, of course, they were also saved, they should also ask for word. Not having anything to do with specifically their role in the miracle, but that they, you know, they're very happy that things worked out this way. So those are that is really the debate that appears within the Rishonim. So the first opinion, the Rashbam, assuming that there was something particularly done, so what did he say? That Hanukkah, the miracle, was done al yedei Yehudis. So who was Yehudis? Who was she? So Sarah's shaking her head that she knows. Is she,
what? I mean, I don't know her relationship.
You never met her personally.
I never met her personally. She was a woman that was dynamic, like people knew of her.
Right. What was the story with her? Do you remember?
The story was everyone was going to surrender, like give up, like we don't have food,
okay,
like we're going to starve, and they're on a better ground than us, whatever. And she's like, no, no, don't, you know, hold on, I can save us, I can do something. And she goes to the
the story with the cheese.
The wine and cheese, and she got him, you know, all drunk and chopped off the head and
brought the head back and said, "See, we could take him down, etc." Right. Okay. So there's two stories about women that revolve around this. Both of them, Both of them, the fact that it's known as the woman called Yehudis is a little questionable. It's unclear how we know that that was her name. So there's two stories. One is a little lesser known, and one is a little bit more known. The lesser known one, but you might have heard about, is the woman with her seven sons. Now,
That's the one I was
thinking. That's the one you were thinking of. She's less likely to be known as Yehudas. But what is the story with the woman with the seven sons, that they were imposed by the Greeks, that you have to, that we're going to make you violate these prohibitions, including eating pig,
idolatry
and pig, etc. And she brought these seven children, these seven sons, and one by one they all refused to do it, and they all died al Kiddush Hashem in front of the mother, and then the mother, it's unclear what happened to her. So this is either she committed suicide or she died of her sorrow. Again, this story appears about five or six different times. It's detailed in this Art Scroll Hanukkah book. This Art Scroll Hanukkah book, by the way, is a treasure. It's been around. Yes, you thank the Wood family for putting it back together for me. But beyond that, being old, it also is. It also comes from the very early days before they started censoring anything. So that's first of all. And so there are some things in here that don't seem to fit with what we I expect to see in an Art Scroll book. Beyond that, it also was written, there's a special haskami here from Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky, right, Rabbi Shmuel's father, that many people don't know a lot of the stories of Chanukah, and a lot of it is ambiguous, and there's no Gemara, and it's obviously not in Tanakh anywhere. So I worked very hard with the author of Hirsch Goldwurm to try to bring all this stuff out, and this is an excellent book. So it happens to be a very excellent book with very detailed footnotes, etc. So he quotes in the footnotes that this appears in four or five different midrashim. One of them, probably most prominently people know it from, is a Gemara Maseches Gittin that's not actually seems to be talking about Hanukkah. It's actually talking about the Caesar, that the story appeared with the Caesar, the Caesar. The Caesar is the Roman Empire is after the Greek Empire. But he said everybody needs to bed down to Avodah Zarah. And people said we won't, and then it tells about this woman who brought her seven children in front, and all seven children inside. So it doesn't say her name there, nor does it really say her name anywhere except for Josephus. But her name, right, is known traditionally as Chana, but it's really based on Josephus, as Rav Goldwurm points out in this book.
She has a great
But in the back, of the Gemara, so the Gemara has a source. The back of the Gemara quotes all the different people that have opinions that are found in the general back of the Gemara, puts them in order so you can find things there. But comments there from Rav Yaakov Emden, that this happened in front of Antiochus. And even though the Gemara says that it's from Caesar, he says no, it happened by Antiochus, which would put it more in line with the Hanukkah story. As many point out, the story could have very well happened more than once. This is a story of martyrdom. The details of a woman with seven sons, those perhaps are, flexible. But it could have happened, something like that story could have happened. Jews have had no shortage of persecutions over the years, and this could have happened under several of those contexts. So that's story number one, where a woman was involved, Chana, and that perhaps inspired B'nai Yisrael that it's time to rebel. That's one. The second inspiration, and perhaps is more prominent, is also more commonly known as Yehudas, where the Yevanim, that's source number four, Rashi quotes that the Yevanim made this establishment that all of the virgin women before they get married have to be with the Greek governor, and this woman did a miracle. What was that miracle? So the Ron explains the details, as Sarah alluded to before, that she went saying that I'm here for my knight, and got him, unclear whether she actually seduced him or not, but got him drunk and gave him a lot of cheese, and therefore got him very tired, and then over the middle of the night she cut his head off and brought it back to the Jewish people and said, you see, we could be able to take down these guys. That, by the way, is the source of the minhag to have cheese over the course of Chanukah.
Why for a half hour after light?
Yes, so we'll get to that. So those are the two detailed, highlighted women stories that appear over the course of Hanukkah. So it's a little bit more than just Dave Barry. Anybody here ever read Dave Barry? So Dave Barry's history books. He has one history of America and one history of the world. So every six or seven pages, he stops and says, "By the way, I would just like to highlight all of the important contributions of women and minorities that took place during this time." And then goes on to the next section. So it's not just being condescending. These are important aspects of the miracles that took place, and that's what the Rashbam was alluding to when he said that they, not just were they included in being saved, but that they actually had an active role to play in the miracle. So either way, That then brings about are there applications with regards to mitzvos that we observe over the course of Chanukah? So there's really two major mitzvos that are done over the course of Chanukah. Last night I was at an event and a big sign said there's one major mitzvah over Chanukah, which they were of course alluding to lighting the menorah. There's really two. There's the mitzvah of lighting the menorah, and then there's also the mitzvah of challah. Those are the two particular things that we do, and perhaps women have a special role to play in both. So number one, as we alluded to before, women are obligated to light the menorah, and women could light the menorah on behalf of their husband. So if the man is out of town, and he's on business trip, etc., so the woman could certainly light, and should be encouraged to light, in the absence of her husband, and that is quoted in Shulchan Aruch, Isha Madlekas Ner Chanukah She'af Hi Chayevisba, that she is obligated in it, seemingly the same way as a man. Now, does that mean that a woman should light her own menorah when the husband is around? So the Mishnah records that a married woman, Levad Me Yishto Dehi Gegufo, that a married woman does not, because she's considered like one with her husband. So that is, at least the custom of the Mishnah Berurah, is that, I'm just curious, is that, do we light our own menorahs here?
Yeah,
you
actually,
like your own?
Yeah.
You like your own?
I didn't when I was...
You didn't when you were met, right? When you
had blood? Years ago.
Chabad women do?
Yeah.
I was on this...
Everybody does.
I was under the impression that Chabad women don't, even non-married girls do.
Shrag is going to be in California, and he, with the time difference and the traveling, he can't light a menorah.
Yeah.
So she's going to light it and have him.
No, that's fine. That everybody agrees to.
Away.
The question is if he's home.
They all light their
own. Even the married women light? Really? Okay. All right, so take Chabad out of the picture, but the standard Mishnah Berurah is that the man lights, his wife doesn't, and all the unmarried girls do. That's what the impression that one gets from Mishnah Berurah. Even it sounds like even girls above Bat Mitzvah. So there is another line in the Mishnah Berurah a little later on where the Mishnah Berurah comments. This idea that a woman could be yotzi the man. However, women don't need to light. Now it's unclear who those women are. Those women, married women or unmarried women. But if they want to, they could go ahead and light. So that's perhaps even implying that non-married women don't have to light either. Now the other extreme is from Rav Soloveitchik. Rav Soloveitchik, and I actually saw on the listserv recently somebody, I assume this is not supposed to be, doesn't have to be confidential, somebody who is a descendant of Rav Eliezer Silver. Rav Eliezer Silver, you may have heard the name, no? Rav Silver was the Rav in Harrisburg, and then in Springfield, and then in Cincinnati. His son then became the rabbi in Harrisburg for many years. In fact, the day school in Harrisburg is known as Silver Academy. Mm-hmm. So going back to Rav Eliezer Silver, he was really before Rav Soloveitchik came on the scene, and Rav Moshe Feinstein said, he was here before them and built up a Gedolei Yisrael of America in those early decades of the 20th century. So he records also in his family that so this person was a descendant of Rav Eliezer Silver. He said his mother, who was the descendant, would also light her own menorah, and that's what the Rav records in Nefesh HaRav. His Afin Hayubi Oso Anes, they're involved in the miracle, means that they have an obligation to light. And just as everybody in the house, right, we're Ashkenazim. In an Ashkenazi house, everybody lights. So why would you then exclude somebody from lighting, right? The idea is to have more menorahs, so why would you say married women shouldn't? So that was the custom. Rabbeinu Amar She'ein Zilzetam V'shemin Hanachum She'af Hanashim Hanesuas Gamkin Yadliku L'atzman, that even married women should light for themselves. On the other extreme, in the Sefer Kovei Tzalachos, Rav Shmuel Kamenetsky, well, not him, he wasn't the one who wrote the Sefer, but it's based on his psakim, it's based on his opinions, that not only do married women not light, but even non-married women above the age of Bat Mitzvah do not light. And why is that? So it's a little bit unclear why that would be. Why would you possibly exclude them? So in the footnote, he quotes a couple of svaros, a couple of ideas. It's a little bit hard to really get a hold of. A lot of them are based on that's the minhag. I mean, you're looking at it objectively, you say, yeah, they should light. But the minhag seems to have developed in the more yeshivish world that unmarried women don't. And then it's kind of, well, can we defend the practice at all? So one of the defenses are... I mean, personally, I would think the custom probably came about because wax was expensive. And, wax was expensive, oil was expensive, and that was just
wicks
a way...
Wicks weren't cheap either.
What?
Wicks
weren't cheap either. Right, it was expensive. People were dirt poor, and we're just going to limit it. But he has a couple of ideas here. Number one, that the man would light outside, that the real original takan is that the men should, you know, that the lighting should be out on the street. They're out in the opening to the courtyard. So a woman's place is inside, so therefore only a man would light there, a woman wouldn't. Yep. Take it or leave it. Another idea he writes here is that it's based on the Rambam, and according to the Rambam, one person lights all of the menorahs. I mean, we think of that, but the Shita HaRambam is that you have the amount of menorahs for each person in the house, but only one person lights all of them. And that could be another shear why the Rambam's position is like that. So he says, okay, well, if the man is lighting all of them, so let them light all of them. But once you're getting involved and include women in the count, but once you're having somebody go ahead and light, so then maybe only men and not women, etc. So, but anyways, that is the custom in the more right-wing world, is that women above the age of bat mitzvah, I think girls do, generally, girls as they're going to third, fourth, fifth grade, but once they turn bat mitzvah, they don't, in favor of the rest of the house, unless, of course, there are no men there. If there are no men there, so then there's a mitzvah that has to be done, in which case, of course, they would
they
participate.
Don't after bat mitzvah?
They don't, right. That's what I'm gathering. That's what I hear.
And if you're lighting yourself and there are people sleeping in your house, you're supposed to wake them up?
If you're lighting yourself and there's nobody else to see it, and it's late at night, and that no one's going to see it from the outside, then there's an idea that someone else should see it, right? Okay. So that is the menorah issue. The second issue is the halal issue. So the halal issue is, halal is normally understood to be mitzvah sasesh as man grama, the same way that we start. It's a time-bound mitzvah. Men are obligated, women aren't. However, Tosfos then adds in this line, in source number 9, in Maseches Sukkah, where he makes the point that, however, halal on Pesach is different. Shiny halal de Pesach, the al hanesva, because it's coming because of a miracle, v'afin ha'ibi oso hanes. And even they are included in that miracle. So what halal is he talking about? What halal is Tosfos talking about? He says halal. He says presumably he's talking about the halal at the Seder, right? Mm-hmm. The halal at the Seder, women are obligated in, and that, right? We are all up or participating. We might be a little sloshed and might be tired. We might be nervous about all those dishes that seem to be growing in the kitchen, but we're still going to go ahead and make and do halal. Now, is that so? Rav Moshe Feinstein and a couple of others have point out that say, you know, that's not exactly what Tosfos said. Tosfos said a halal that was established based on a miracle. So that could be any halal related to a miracle. Now, Har Sinai, Shavuos wasn't a miracle. Sukkos wasn't really a miracle. That's not really what we're referring to on Sukkos. But Pesach was a miracle. It could be that it's talking about all of Pesach. And if it's talking about all of Pesach, maybe it's talking about all of Chanukah. And maybe it's talking about all of Purim. Now, Purim, we don't say Halel, but we kind of do, right? One of the reasons we don't say Halel is because we say we have Megillah Esther. So Megillah Esther qualifies as Halel. But Chanukah suggests to Rav Moshe Feinstein that maybe women are obligated in Halel on Chanukah. And he then goes on, and in the Kovetz Halachos here, Rav Shmuel says, yeah, yes, they should. That is an appropriate minhag for women to be careful to say Halel during Chanukah. So I put that out as a something to be
done. Is it a bigger miracle than the others?
Your question is why don't we say halal on Purim?
Yeah, because of Megillah Esther.
So there's several answers to that question. It's really a Purim shear. But one answer is because Megillah Esther takes the place of Halal. Another answer is because it happened outside of Eretz Yisrael. Now, the truth is, so did Pesach. But Pesach was leading to Eretz Yisrael. And the third answer that the Gemara discusses is that very nice that we were all saved on Purim. It was a big miracle. But nothing changed. I mean, from the way things were at the way things stood afterwards as well. Now, not exactly, because now Esther is in power. Esther, right, but nothing changed. I mean, they ended up being the same place where they were in the beginning. They were still in Galus and Babel, etc. Now, there is one nuance that changed, a very important nuance, and that is that Esther is now married to Achashverosh. Okay. And perhaps that's what led to the building of the second piece of Migdash. So, but that already takes us to a Purim Shir, which we'll have to save for another lunch and learn. Yes. So that's the issue with regards to the Hal. Then there is a third issue, which Nancy mentioned, and that is the idea of the Isser Malacha, a prohibition of doing work. So where does this come from? So Shulchan Aruch quotes from, I believe, Rav Yehuda Halevi, this idea that on the 25th of Kislev, we begin the 8th day of Chanukah. This is actually the very first thing that's mentioned in Shulchan Aruch and Hilchos Chanukah. And we're not allowed to do hesped, and you're not allowed to fast, you're not allowed to give eulogies about mutar and basis malacha. But you could go ahead and do work. V'noagos hanashim shelo lasos malacha ba'ochan eres dolkos. And the custom is that women don't do malacha while the candles are lit. V'yishmi sheomer. And there are those that say we should not be makel for them. So why would this be? So suggests the Aruch HaShulchan, because the Ktsas Mines Chanukah Nasa Al Yedei Isha, because they were responsible for the miracle. So Afin HaYosei sounds really good, but all of a sudden we say, oh, and therefore you can't do Malacha. Why? Because they were in particular danger because of this issue of women getting married, having to be with the governor first, and they were saved. And also, the miracle was done by way of Yehudis, that she got the guy drunk and gave him milk, and therefore we are careful to eat cheese on Chanukah, even though he then adds in, this didn't actually take place during the time of Chanukah. Right? His claim about this issue of Yehudas, Yehudas didn't actually happen right around the Chanukah story. This took place a few years off, I'm not sure.
Doesn't the story also show up in one of the apocryphal books?
Yes, the Book of Yehudas.
But there it's Book Babylonian. Of Judah.
Right. It places in a different period of time. Now, again, these gezeros were existent in many different periods. And it could be that they were taken as inspiration from different times, and who did what at what times, and who was the hero at what times. It's unclear, right? We don't have a Tanakh. The Gemara is not so clear. The Josephus isn't so reliable. Like, it's very hard to figure out what exactly is the timing of many of these things, but he suggests that there should be a prohibition of malacha. Now, what is included in that? So probably, most poskim assume, the only thing what's included in that are like Chol HaMoed rules. Chol HaMoed rules apply. So a woman shouldn't sew, maybe shouldn't do laundry during that time, but she is allowed to cook dinner. Of course, if you want to claim and say, no, it says Shulchan Aruch no malacha, you cook me dinner, so you'll have the prerogative to do so. But most assume that really only applies to things that are prohibited to do on Chol HaMoed, which they have nothing to do with the day itself. But to do things that you're preparing for dinner, it's going to take place in an hour, so, or 20 minutes, or whatever the time may be, so that is assumed to be okay. So again, bottom line, review, women's role, either that they were also saved, or that they actually took an active role. The active role either was the woman known as Hannah, but perhaps not, who had seven sons, and that was then a battling cry for everybody else, or perhaps it's the story of a woman known as Yehudas, but also given different names in different sources for killing the Greek governor. Menorah lighting, women are certainly permitted to, as a result, women certainly have the same obligation as men. Generally, married women don't in when their husbands are around. There is a bit of more of a question about unmarried women, and there's Rav Soloveitchik saying, and Rav Silver saying, that even married women should light on their own. You have the issue of Hallel, the suggestion that maybe women should be obligated in Hallel over the course of Chanukah, and then you have the prohibition of Malacha, that would only be a woman's issue, not a men's issue. There are some deeper reasons why that might be, but for now, I guess that suffices. So thank you all for coming. Thank you to Gladys for lunch, and we'll have to do this again at some point soon.
Did you like it?